Education and Workforce Development will now be in order. Today's date is Thursday, February 5th, 2015. So we do try and wait until we have a quorum, but I know we have a very full agenda and we aren't taking action in the beginning, so we will get started. We always regret for those who are presenting that we don't have as many members as possible to hear your important comments, but we know that they do follow up and listen after as well. So we will get started with a presentation by the Deputy Commissioner from the Department of Labor and Industry, Jessica Luman.
Thank you.
And so I just, of course, have to add my comments to my introduction because I have had the privilege of working with Deputy Commissioner Luman over the past many, many months as the department has fulfilled the objectives of the original pipeline bill. And as we all know, we've dropped that name and we're now calling it the Earn While You Learn project. I don't know if you know that. You can call it whatever you want, Deputy Commissioner Luman. with that, I will turn it over to you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. Again, my name is Jessica Luman. I'm the Deputy Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry, and you just rocked my whole world. So, we've been calling this the Pipeline Project for the last 6 months, but we're flexible, except that we like the Pipeline Project name because it was Senator Bonoff's idea. And just in case you're wondering what it stands for, it stands for the Private Investment Public Education Labor and Industry Experience Project. But we are happy to change the name after.
And Deputy Commissioner, you understand that why we've been asked to drop it is because of all the controversy around the current pipelines.
Absolutely.
Okay, good.
Absolutely. There was confusion.
Right.
Especially
exactly.
At the Department of Labor and Industry, where we are also the plumbing and pipe fitting agency.
Last joke about that, Commissioner.
Yes.
It was underscored when my mother called me to say, why is the governor on TV talking about your project? And so I explained to her that my project was not about oil.
Excellent.
So
excellent.
Go ahead.
Well, this is a pipeline workforce project. And we're going to talk about it as the pipeline project today. But I hope in the context of the progress report that we've submitted to the members of the committee, and there's copies of the executive summary of the progress report for the public, and there it's also available on our website online for anybody who would like to read both the executive summary, the contents of the report, and see all of the excellent appendices that were provided by partners of this project, as well as some status updates about where we are and where we're going. The project is really important in that we've been able to do a lot of work in a relatively short period of time. And it's thanks to the leadership of Chair Bonoff, supported by several legislators, our partners at Deed and at MinSCU, Minnesota Chamber of Commerce has been very involved, the University of Minnesota has been very involved, participation of over 200 industry leaders. We've been able to accomplish something that takes many other organizations and many other governments, frankly, many, many more months to accomplish. A lot of the people who participated in this project are in this room today. I'd like to thank them all for their commitment and the time that they've contributed to this important project. I'm just going to go through really briefly sort of what we did, how we did it, and what our recommendations are going forward. The first part about this project is that we were looking to leverage the Registered Apprenticeship Program, which is currently regulated by the Department of Labor and Industry. We have currently about 9,000 registered apprentices in the state, and they're completing programs in the construction trades, utility, manufacturing, and healthcare. We looked instead at, from registered apprenticeship, we looked at this broader concept of dual training. And it's a training, it's a project, a process that's very common in Europe, and is also something that is really a new and innovative approach in some ways in Minnesota workforce development. We specifically looked at four different industries, and those were the healthcare services industry, information technology, manufacturing, and agriculture. And the way that we structured the concept of dual training was that it really involves three components. It involves employment, it involves related technical instruction, and it involves on-the-job training. And that's structured on-the-job training with a mentor relationship with a seasoned and experienced worker. In order to accomplish this work in a short period of time, we convened what were called industry councils, And those councils included industry experts, industry associations, representative employers, higher education institutions, representatives from labor, and representatives from government, all to get together to talk about really four primary things. One, to explore the dual training concept and identify current and workforce development needs for each of those industries. Two, identify up to four occupations in each industry that industry councils thought would really be conducive to dual training. So it was really an iterative process with those councils. Three, begin to identify the competencies that are required for each of the occupations identified by the councils. And four, begin to develop what would be new or supporting continuing dual programs, dual training programs in each of the industries. So, as I said, we have the executive summary for the public, and we have the report for the members of the committee. And I'd like to just tell you that the executive summary really indicates that there are really four common, there are many common themes, but there are a few common themes for these four growth industries. And what was really exciting was that there is interest and engagement in dual training, and a clear role was identified in these groups for employers, education, labor, and government to assist in developing as a dual training as a workforce tool. So I'm going to scooch right on to the recommendations because I think that's really where the meat of what the next steps are for this project are. Based on the work so far, and we are continuing the work at Labor and Industry, but based on the work on the project so far, there were eight recommendations that were brought forward by the industry councils. One, complete the occupational competency standards for all of the occupations identified through this project. When an industry can all agree, there's credibility, there's integrity, when the industry can all agree on what is required, the skills, knowledge, and ability that is required for each individual occupation, that's when you can begin to train an industry to those sets of skills, and that's what we call the competency standards. And competency standards, having competency standards for occupations that include both the related instruction and the job training, are what make dual training different from customized training. The industry experts have begun developing and validating occupation-specific competencies for six of the pipeline occupations. And again, where we are right now is we've got the models for them. And if in the report, if you want to look at page 7 of the report, you'll see the sort of the format that we're using. We're using the U.S. Department of Labor competency model framework in order to build those frameworks for each occupation. Six have been done, and we continue to develop competency standards for the other nine occupations identified through the project, through the industry councils. Recommendation number two, we recommend building competency councils for each of these industries to develop competency standards for additional occupations. Again, in the time that we met, we had three industry council meetings for each of the industry groups. So in the 12 meetings, we were able to identify 15 different occupations. But these are not all of the occupations in need by these industries, by any stretch of the imagination. And they're also not necessarily the only occupations that are really conducive to this dual training model. There are other occupations that the industries have already identified could or should be included in this next phase. In order to continue the work on these projects, we would need to develop the competencies for additional occupations, and that would require subject matter experts to come and really give us their technical expertise as to what the skills, knowledge, and abilities are for each of these additional competencies and occupations. So we recommend that we put together a framework so that we can continue to develop the competency standards. Recommendation number three is establish dual training committees for at least one pipeline project identified occupation. The dual training committee is usually housed at the employer or at the industry association, and they're composed of employer representatives, a dual training program coordinator, related training providers, and can include worker representatives and representatives from DLI when it makes sense for that to happen. These committees take the approved competency standards and figure out how to deliver on those for that a specific employer or employer association. So that's the next part of the infrastructure is you have a competency standards, then you need this group of people who are willing to implement at the employer level. So we recommend that dual training committee structure be formalized for all new dual training, but right now we're focusing on at least one in each of the industry areas. Recommendation four is to develop template and implementation tools for new dual training programs for all of the occupations. This is one of the areas where we really heard a lot from the industry councils is that they like the idea, they just want tools. They want to know how to implement it, they want a checklist, they want to know how to really make this work in their industries and as employers, and so the recommendation is that we help develop those. Recommendation number five, create and execute a plan for dual training outreach, development, and awareness. This was I know you all have heard this as well. This was echoed over and over and over again, which is really how do we get into the K-12 system, the pre-K-12 system, the K-20 system? How do we get into all of the areas where kids are starting to make decisions about how they're going to proceed through their career development? And really talk about these industries and talk about dual training and talk to their parents about those things. So this was something that was felt very strongly throughout all of the industry councils. Recommendation six, align dual training with other workforce initiatives. Again, this is one of the things that we heard over and over again, which was don't reinvent the wheel every single time. How do we make sure that there's alignment? How do we make sure there's integration? How do we make sure that the people that are being served by one program are also being able to participate in this new kind of dual training program? How are we making sure that we're not leaving anybody behind? And so really integrating all of the systems. Recommendation seven, and this was an interesting one, and there's several people in the room who were very strong in recommending this. And this is in order for dual training to work long-term in Minnesota, is there really needs to be an ongoing analysis of what is the commitment on behalf of the employer and what is the outcome for the employer and the worker, both in terms of cost-benefit analysis, in terms of return on investment, and in terms of societal benefits greater as we are lowering student debt, as we're increasing earning potential. So continuing to analyze this from a high level in terms of return on investment and cost analysis. And finally, recommendation eight, explore providing necessary financial support to make dual training programs viable and sustainable for employers and employees. Industry councils recommended that the legislature explore possible incentive funds for employers and dual trainees or apprentices to offset the initial costs associated with beginning a dual training and apprenticeship or apprenticeship program. And this is a hard issue as we continue to look at really how do we both create the infrastructure to develop and then also the necessary long-term support to sustain dual training programs. DLI continues to support the expansion of dual training and registered apprenticeship throughout the state. We serve as both a resource and a regulator of registered apprenticeship programs. We believe we have a really good start on this important project to help develop Minnesota's skilled workforce in these four critical industries. And I want to thank all of the employers, all of the industry representatives, all of the legislators, everyone who participated in really putting together this very big project in a very short time frame. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. Any questions for the Commissioner? Well, today we're going to be exploring this topic further, both to review the bill associated with it, but then we are fortunate to have our next presenter actually share about it from a different perspective. So thank you very much. And I would ask Herman Nels, the Counselor for Labor, Health, and Social Affairs, Embassy of the Federal Republic of Germany, to come forward.
Madam Chair, members of the Commission, thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to be here. My name is Herman Nels. I'm Counselor for Labor, Health, and Social Affairs.
Say your name in your own pronunciation one more time, because I think I mispronounced.
Sure, Gary, I will do it. Herman Nels.
Thank you.
Now
very
clear?
Good, Counselor Nels.
Yeah, have you got okay, Herman Nils. So it's a German name. Sorry for it.
So Counselor Nels has joined us really from D.C., and we're so grateful for you taking the time to come and be with us today. So I would encourage members to listen carefully and feel free to ask questions to understand this approach that we're borrowing pieces of in the bill before us today. So
okay.
Proceed.
Okay. Again, thank you very much. No, talking about dual educational training in Germany, it's I think this is currently a very, very important matter, because when looking at the current crisis all over Europe, it is probably not surprising that many, many countries now are focusing on the experience of Germany. And the reason for it is that the rate of youth unemployment in Germany is really low compared with other countries. So the current rate of youth unemployment in Germany is somewhere between 5 and 6%, as it is more than 25 up to 30% in other European countries. And so this was the reason, I think this is the reason for the very, very intensive debate now for many people interested in being interested in the so-called German approach of organizing the dual training. I think the one of the most important issues when talking about the dual training is that there is it is a comprehensive approach taking on board all different stakeholders or social partners, however you describe them, and that there is a common agreement that the German dual training system is giving the best precondition in order to give access for young people to the labor market. So they are well equipped by the necessary qualification competences they need in order to have access directly after finalizing their schools. And so there is a strong cooperation and interaction between the field of education and labor market. And I think this is very, very important when describing the German system. There is no separated discussion. So what is the best on educational field, how to get young people qualified, or describing the needs on the labor market? No, there is a strong cooperation between the education field and the labor market needs. And so this is well stipulated in this German Vocational Training Act, which was launched in 1969. And we were, at that time, Germany was really facing with by a very, very confusing and disorganized framework system of training, because there were no standards, there were no really thorough outcome of exams, so the companies were not really satisfied with the way young people were trained in the past, as were also the government and also other social partners, including also the trade unions. And in 1969, everybody really agreed on the so-called Vocational Training Act in Germany, which is, I think, worldwide one of the most comprehensive acts describing all necessary information and providing all necessary information you should have when it comes to describe the precondition of a provider, of a company, to describe also the important content of competencies of young people and how to organize the cooperation between education and labor market. Hmm. So it was a very intensive debate, but finally everybody agreed, and now we are running this Vocational Training Act for more than 45 years, so nearly 50 years. So, and we are really proud of it, and I think this really makes sense. So I think the most important point talking about the German system is interaction between education and labor market. It is a good access, a very quick access to the labor market, and I would like to describe it, how this functions. There is an integrated internships in the secondary one level. So the pupils are asked, and they are really this is part of the school curricula, that they have to organize for themselves a 3-week internship in a company. And so this gives them the opportunity to learn about the environment of a company. So this is the first access to the labor market. And very often, exactly the company they are in for an internship are exactly the company they are starting their dual training afterwards. So this is a very, very, I think, very, very good approach in organizing the cooperation between school and the companies on the labor market. So I think this is a very, very important. So the cooperation is an additional element I would like to stress. What might be also interesting?
Excuse me, Councillor Nels, a question on that.
Yeah, sure.
Senator Klassen.
Go on, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just wondering, on this 3-week internship, is that a self-select by the student, or is this arranged, pre-arranged?
Counselor Nitz.
Yeah, good. Thank you for this question. No, you know, this is the pupils are really asked to look for the company for themselves. So the teachers will provide them probably with some ideas. But this is really part of the process at that time, that the young people are really forced to look for the appropriate company. So they are the one to go around, knock the door. To be frank, so everybody knows if you make an internship, for example, at Mercedes-Benz or BMW, you can be proud. So if you will ask for an internship by BMW or Mercedes-Benz first or Siemens, or for example. But there are a lot of small and medium enterprise companies also. But it is up to the pupils to find the appropriate company which will give them the possibility to organize the internship for 3 weeks, as just described. So it is up to the pupils to
Senator
look for
Sharon.
It.
Thank you very much for being here. This is very interesting. I'm trying to think of myself as trying to, in the student's position. If I want one in a hospital setting, for example, because I'm interested in healthcare, is it even more precise than that? Because that's a huge range of options from med tech to who knows what. And how do I refine that? And and the second question I would be is, I bet you there are some lists of companies that have already indicated they would be cooperating with this idea.
Yeah. No.
Counselor.
So the students, they talk to each other. So they are in contact also to the older students. So they will tell them about their experiences, and what probably what my what is also important in addition to what I've just described, the internship is not an internship as such, so it is integrated in the curricula of the courses within the school. That means it is prepared within the classroom, and everybody has to write a report on it afterwards, and this will be circulated afterwards. So this will give the opportunity to others to learn about experiences somebody has made when being an intern on internship in a hospital, for example, or whatever. No, again, this is the first access to the labor market. And so this is not the decision for the whole life afterwards. So this will give the first impression of what's going on. And afterwards, they will be more specific on how to decide which occupation or profession might be the best.
Thank you.
Yeah? Okay.
Thank you. Continue.
Okay, so one more issue I would like to talk about is the question of competences. Because it seems to me, and having in mind the very huge debate in all over Europe, that it is important to think about the content of the dual training as such. So to my point of view, it is much more than just providing knowledge and skills on a specific level. I think the dual training includes also the element of social competence. I would describe in this way, and also I'm also in favor of using the element of reflectiveness. So that means that a trainee should be able to think about what he or she is doing, and not only fulfilling tasks, but also being conscious about the surrounding, the environment of decision making on an individual, but also on a structural level. So this is important when talking about competences. It is important not only to describe the competence in the way that it is a just fulfilling of tasks. No, those trainees must be able to think independently, to think about how to make decisions. And I think these are the current requirements out of modern labor market, that somebody is equipped also with decision making, and this is not only knowledge and skills, but this is also social competence, and this is also reflectiveness, I would describe. So this is for me, I think this is a crucial element also when talking and describing the German system. So and in addition to it, I would like to mention also the very important role of the chambers of commerce and industry within the dual training in Germany, because the chambers of commerce and industry, they are the one to organize the regulations of companies. So the companies ask for being able to provide training opportunities, but the chambers are the one to look after the preconditions. So if a company is really able to do this training, to organize this training, if the company does really have the well qualified trainers for the process. So the chambers are they do play a very, very important role within the whole procedure. And last not least, I think the acceptance and reliability of the dual training system in Germany is also because exists also because of the very strong involvement of employers' organizations on a top level, but also on trade unions in Germany, because they are when it comes to create new curricula, for example, they have to find a balance of long-term thinking on describing and finding the right curricula and short-term. And to come to a balance, I think, between different interests, I think this is also an explanation for the good impact and good running of the dual training system in Germany. So these were some remarks I would like to stress.
Thank you very much, Councillor Nels. Can I ask you, in terms of the overall student population, what would you say, how many of them are getting associate's degrees who are participating? How many are getting one-year certificates, four-year degrees? Can you describe your population?
Yeah, sure. So we have about 1.5 million trainees within the dual training system in Germany. And describing this, the rate of 1.5 million, this includes all training courses which last at a minimum 2 years, up to 3 years, and up to 3.5 years. Because we are convinced that there is a minimum time of training which is necessary in order to receive the required level of competence. And when there is a short term of training, so we do not think that this is the best precondition in order to reach the level as required.
And what would a 3.5-year degree be called?
This would be also within the dual training in Germany. So it depends on the specific occupation or profession. You are a mechanic, you are a mechatronic, or you're a plumber. So this is all described. I think we have overall 340, to be precise, 340 different occupations or professions within the dual system in Germany. And they are described by specific names or titles, and there are specific curricula and specific description for the contents a company must provide and must train trainees in order to be successful. And this is sorry, Madam Chair. This is also important. I think you should know about it. Within the Vocational Training Act, there is a nationwide standardized exam. So the exam is not. This is not an exam organized by the company. No, this is a specific body who is in charge of for the testing of the trainees at the very end of the training after three and a half years. And so this is a very I can tell you this is a very very sophisticated exam. So this is not an easy exam, and you really have to work hard for it. So, but the exam, the standard of the exam, this is nationwide the same. So it doesn't make no difference at all. If you run through the exam in the very north of Germany, in the very south or west, it doesn't make no difference at all, or east, because every employer must be sure that if somebody applies for a job, he or she must be able to organize the job as required. So, and the exam is exactly the testimony that somebody is able to do so.
And so the exam would be different for each job.
Yeah. Okay. For each job, or for each training or occupation. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Wow, 350.
I know it. Senator Sharon,
did you say 350? Jobs, I guess you describe, have been described in curriculum that has both what is expected in the training in the workplace and what's expected in the training in the higher education. And it crosses what I would box our educational system into primary, secondary, and then post-secondary. But the 3 weeks internship is a secondary education exercise, and it may have a certificate or something associated with it.
No, you it is part of the secondary one. Yeah, so it's in Germany. It's a ninth class to do the internship, and you only get a certificate that you were on internship. So, but this is not an exam of something like. No, the exam is the end of the training process after 2, 3, or 3.5 years.
And if you don't mind,
Senator Sharon,
you don't mind, Senator Bonner. So I'm getting a vision in my mind then that what you're really describing is that it's in the higher education institutions that they continue to align the higher educational curriculum, like around nursing.
Yeah.
If you took nursing as an example, the academic institution would work with the actual practical application in the workplace and align the curriculum and the completion of that student would have had both the hospital experience and training that they're responsible for.
So this is this. Yeah, thank you for this question. No, there is. So we call it. There should be access for further education. So when you have your training award or degree or whatever, so you have access to university afterwards. So you can start your career at university as a bachelor or a master degree afterwards. But in Germany, we also have a very, very strong and stipulated system of further education in the field of training. Technicians, for example, they are trained in the labor market and in special courses organized by the chambers, by the way, and they reach a very, very high level of competence outside the university. Yeah. So, but again, there is a strong correlation, also interconnection between the dual training system and afterwards being able and having access to university. And it is this is so this gives you also access. This is an entry for your universal career afterwards. So it is on the same level as you describe it in secondary two. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Any other questions? Yes, Senator Sparks.
Just a quick one. Thank you very much for your testimony. This is very interesting. I'm just curious, does the German government help to fund any portion of this program?
Counselor.
It depends. This is my answer. It depends. No, because this is a very strong system, which is so well integrated in the labor market. So there is a general rule when it comes to financing. So and the rule is the first year of training that costs you money from the view of company. The second year there is a balance between profits and costs, and the third year you will make profits out of it. However, what is necessary and what is important, you have to organize it in a very, very good way. So this is the normal way of thinking in Germany. However, the government gives money when it comes to create new approaches within the training system. So, for example, to give access to special target groups, for example, or if there are special programs for Let me think about women on the labor market, or this is another example. Yeah. So, but there are others. So it depends. Yeah. So normally the system, because it is so long existing already, it is not necessary to give money into the system. But however, when it comes to create new approaches within the training system, in these cases, the government would help.
That was interesting, because I was under the misconception that in the German dual education that the post-secondary training was provided by the government.
Sorry, could you repeat it again?
I was saying I was under the misconception that, you know, I knew college was not a charge, correct? The government pays for college?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this system, which is the more vocational side of things, that is not paid for by the government.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. No, because this is a so-called, this is a dual system. You are absolutely right, Madam Chair. So I was thinking of the companies. So if they receive money or not. But you are absolutely right. The dual system is called dual because it is a combination of company training and also of school education. But the schools, they are financed by the government.
Senator Sparks, did you get that?
The school does fund the
education.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you. Thank you very much for clarification.
Okay, so this is Andy. Yeah. The university is.
Thank you. Senator Klassen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. So far, we've talked about a dual training that we would call vocational training.
Yeah.
I assume there are other students that are pursuing what you might term professional careers or university, and I'm just wondering how that determination is made as far as the track that the student would be following for their occupation.
Yeah, but no, it, I think this that doesn't make any difference, because if you are, you have to be in a legal status of a trainee within the under the Vocational Training Act. And so, and if you are a trainee under the Vocational Training Act, this will give you the right to have access to the university. This will give you the right to do the exam and everything. So, and there are also other approaches. You are absolutely right, but they are separated from the Vocational Training Act approach. Mm-hmm. So, this I think we have to distinguish these different approaches.
Senator Claassen.
Thank you, ma'am. And my question is, how is that decision made about which track the student will be going?
Okay. So, but the decision is to be taken by the student, by the youngster, him or herself. So nobody else will make this decision. So he or she is the one to decide whether to start a career as a trainee or to finalize the high school secondary 2 level and then to go to university directly. However, nearly 50% of young people decide for the training in Germany because they know that if they have a good school degree and a dual training afterwards, this is the best condition for their whole life. For example, just to describe my personal career very, very briefly. So I finished my high school, and after high school, I started my career as a mechanic. And I worked for some years in industry in a very sophisticated environment. And later on, I decided to study and to do my economic degree. So I'm economist now. So, but this is for in Germany. This is quite usual to have the high school degree exam, and afterwards you start as a trainee because everybody knows this is the best basis for having access to the labor market and everything. So therefore it's so impressive.
Thank you very much. Well, we are so grateful that you have joined us today.
Yeah. So if you allow me, Madam Chair, yes. I would like to just mention one aspect. No, I have been living in the United States now since June last year, and I'm so impressed and I'm really enthusiastic in getting to know that there is such an intensive debate on reforming the training schemes in all over the United States. And it seems to me that it is so important to think about standardization of training. And therefore, I'm so thrilled and so enthusiastic when I heard about your draft bill on the workforce you are thinking about. I'm really happy and I appreciate it so much, and I think, and I wish you all the best when it comes to decide on this bill.
Well, thank you very much. And so your presence underscores that. And so we do thank you. And so now I'm going to turn the committee over to Senator Claassen so I can actually present the bill.
It's an advertising.
Welcome to the committee, Senator Boniff.
And, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I understand you do have an amendment. Would you like to handle that first? Or?
Sure, that would be great. I have the A8.
Senator Boniff is moving the A8 amendment. Everyone has a copy, I believe.
No, Mr. Chair. Right. We just have the first engrossment.
We'll wait until all committee members have a copy. While we're waiting, Senator Boniff, you plan on making a few comments on the amendment?
Sure.
Very good.
Yeah, so the A8 is mostly just technical changes that occurred after having the bill be before Senator Sparks' committee and then getting comments during that. So, for example, you know, change the word based to consistent with. For example, when we're asking the Department of Labor to identify competency standards, we want to make sure those competency standards are consistent with the national standards, things like that. So most of them are just changes in word to clarify intent. However, on line 1.3 of the amendment, and it's probably 1.2, in summary, when we were before the Jobs Committee, there was a very long discussion with Senator Herr and Senator Rood, and the committee actually worked very hard to see if we could incorporate within this bill a preference for women and minorities. And it turned out that because of the structure of the bill, it doesn't really work. We were advised by counsel, and so I will take you through the bill overall and then address that, but do want to be clear that in this amendment, we are deleting what was approved in the Jobs Committee, and Senator Herr is aware and has concurred with that approach. So that's what there is to say about that. And then I'll go through the bill after.
Before you do that, let's Senator Boniff moves to amend Senate File 5 with the A8 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same signal. Okay. The amendment passes. Senator Boniff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the bill before you is building off what Deputy Commissioner Luman presented. We have done our preliminary work, and we're now at a point where we say, okay, how can we move Minnesota forward to begin to create a dual education system using the Minnesota version based on what you just heard so eloquently described as what's happening in other countries. And so I will briefly take you through the bill and then have testifiers who were part of the process have a chance to speak. So if you're looking at the bill, subdivision one of the bill is the dual training competency grant. So we give the Department of Employment and Economic Development we say that this program is created at DEED, and we provide grants for the training of employees to achieve the competency standards that are established by the Commissioner of the Department of Labor. In Subdivision 2, we identify who are the grantees, and these are basically employers or organizations that have agreed to hire a student who will become their employee. Subdivision 3 talks about that there must be an agreement between the business and a secondary institution to provide the training. And remember, members, that the training must be in areas where the Department of Labor has said competency standards exist, so that there is fidelity and we aren't doing some kind of a one-off customized training approach. In the application, there are various requirements listed within this bill that the application must include. But we do want to and hope that the Commissioner of DEED will develop a very simple application, because we certainly don't want our application to be a barrier. there is an employer match whereby we're saying if you're a large employer, if your volume is, you know, or sales are 25 million or more, we think you have the wherewithal to help our students pay for their academic schooling as well as the on-the-job training. And I think you're going to hear in a little bit from 3M, who's actually more generous with their employees than our bill even suggests. But we are saying if you're a medium size or a small business, we're not asking for that match, because what we are asking for is their skin in the game by saying, I'll hire you. I will pay you and provide that mentorship while you're in school. We have not put in the maximum grant amount yet, as we don't have a financial target from the bill, and we're hearing this in policy. So it will go to the jobs committee where those blanks will be filled in. We're asking for the deed commissioner to issue a report on how the program's working. Did the employee complete their schooling? How were their wages as a result of participating in that? We give the Department of Labor, the commissioner, some authority to continue developing the competency standards. And I will say that since the bill's been introduced, we've been approached by other industries who would like to be added to the bill. We started out thinking this would be very narrow and we would just begin the dual education approach using the four industries that we have established. We've been asked by the education community as well as renewable energy community if they could be added to the bill. We have not worked out those details, so we don't have an amendment for you today, but I do want the committee to know that in case we're able, by the time we get to jobs, to have worked something out. In particular, Mary Gilbert, who I saw who was here, brought forward an idea that the St. Paul schools had where they've got TAs that are working in their schools that are bilingual, that are providing a lot of help in those classrooms, and they want those TAs to be able to, or paras, to be able to go and get their teaching degree at night, and they have an arrangement with Metro State. But these people don't have enough resources, financial resources, to quit their jobs to do it, and they don't have the money to just go to school. So the idea is this approach, this dual education, could in fact be a tool for that. And so we're going to see if we can't work that out. I think that really summarizes the tenets of the bill. But again, the idea is to provide funding to businesses as an incentive whereby they will hire the employee, and those funds would not be going for that employee's salary, but rather for the training itself. And so as we heard in the German model, actually the government pays for all of the school side of things, and we are in fact suggesting that we would fill in after Pell and state grant monies were used to pay for additional, that gap, so to speak. So I see Senator Sundjom has joined us. Senator Sundjom, Senator Nelson, Representative Norton in the House, many other legislators have been deeply involved in launching this. And Senator Sundjom, I'm sorry that you didn't get the opportunity to hear the diplomat from Germany who spoke, but I know you've been there and you've heard firsthand. So thank you for joining us. So if there aren't questions at this time, I'd like to call on my testifiers.
Please do so.
Thank you. And besides my testifiers, I do want to acknowledge in the room Sabina Engel, who has been, Dr. Engel has been such an important part of this conversation, who actually took folks from Minnesota to Germany to learn about the dual workforce system. Bern Hapke, who worked on our small group, working group to develop this project. Cindy Johnson from Land O'Lakes. Senator Sparks, is he still? Oh, he stepped out. We wanted to make sure somebody from Ag, who was involved in this, was here to show support, and so we appreciate Cindy. Sarah Radosovich, who worked on behalf of the chamber, I know she's here, worked very hard to make sure this bill worked. And anybody else who has been on the advisory councils and in the room, we do thank you for that. So now, if I could call Janae Hoppe from Human Resources, Manager of 3M, Doug Stang. We'd start with those two from 3M, and then we have two more. Ms. Hoppe.
Ms. Hoppe, Mr. Stang, welcome to the committee. And Would you please introduce yourselves before making your comments for the record, please?
Certainly. My name is Janae Hoppe. I am a human resource manager at 3M. I represent one of our largest manufacturing areas within 3M. And I'm also a fourth-generation employee of 3M, so I kind of have manufacturing going through my blood. So I'm very happy to be here to talk about this bill.
So you can go ahead and just make your comment.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I wanted to talk a little bit about the opportunity we had with this bill. The two pieces, the competency piece and the apprentice piece, are so important to our company. When we were asked to come in and tell our story of some of our skill needs and our competencies, we learned, sitting with other folks in the room, that we're not too far off. What I can tell you about 3M specifically, when we talk about advanced manufacturing, one of the things that we're seeing is the manufacturing industry is maturing. So no longer are we talking about what we think about manufacturing, folks on lines putting things together. We're actually talking about things like laser converting, automation, robotics. And all of these different manufacturing applications require us to have a higher skilled workforce. So we're very excited about the opportunity to have existing and new employees be involved in an apprentice program. What I will tell you is Senator Bonhoeff was correct. We actually have a 50% tuition reimbursement program existing at 3M right now. But if you think about it, you know, when a person chooses to go back to school or a person chooses to be part of this apprentice program, there's sort of two things that they may have to get over. One is a financial burden, potentially, and you know, these folks are making $30,000, $40,000, $50,000. So even $5,000 is a lot of money for them to pay for this. The second piece is time. And at 3M, with our flexible work arrangement policy that we have right now and our plants that work 24/7, this works very well with our existing structure and also our need to have a higher skilled workforce.
Thank you.
I'm going to suggest that we hold our questions till our friends from 3M finish their presentation, and we'll open it up for questions. Mr. Stang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Doug Stang, Government Affairs for 3M. I want to thank Senator Bonhoeff for all of her work on this issue. As is mentioned, for 3M, Minnesota is obviously a very important state to us as we're headquartered here, but we also have our largest manufacturing footprint here as anywhere else in the world. So filling those jobs across the state and the facilities, we have facilities in Staples, Alexandria, New Ulm, Fairmont, Hutchinson. We have a number of facilities and a lot of jobs in manufacturing. We have over 16,000 employees right now in Minnesota. We work very closely with the institutions of higher ed and the communities that our facilities are located in, but we see this as an excellent opportunity to strengthen those relationships and really increase the potential and the quality of workers that are coming out of those out of the higher ed institutions that meet the needs that we have in the facility. So we appreciate the efforts of Senator Bonhoeff, and we think this is a step in the right direction.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Yes, Senator Kent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as the wife of a second-generation 3Mer, I am really impressed because I've not heard that level before. That is great.
I'm working on the fifth generation. We just got to get them through school.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah, I'm working on the third generation.
There you go.
No, I just want to thank you all. I know from working with 3M in my district, and we have so many 3Mers in our community, you know, what a commitment you have had over so many years and has been reinforced in very recent years, as we're seeing with the construction of the new R&D building, that 3M has been so committed to important workforce developments, and not just at the center in Maplewood, but also throughout the state. So I just wanted to thank you for being here to lend your support to this very important initiative today.
Thank you. Any other questions? Comments?
Very good.
Thank you very
much.
Thank you
so much for being here.
Yeah. So I'm hearing that my advanced manufacturing testifiers might not be here. Is that correct, Mr. Kornacki?
Yeah, I don't see it.
Is Kimberly Aragone in the room?
Well, members Kimberly Aragone and Luanne Bartley, there must have been some miscommunication. Kimberly Aragone did testify in the Jobs Committee. She is an unusual woman because she leads a trade association in manufacturing where mostly you see men. And so it's always a pleasure to have her talk about the challenges of manufacturing. And so they have been an integral part of shaping the bill. But we'll certainly keep their comments on the record from the Jobs Committee. So I believe, unless Ms. Radosevich would like to say anything. Where is she? From the chamber? Okay, nope, I think I'm done.
Okay, well, we also have a few questions here.
Very good.
Senator Torres-Ray and then Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Bonhoeff, I am thinking about adding some language to the eligible grantees. In doing this work, I hear you over and over that one of the intentions is really to bring a greater degree of diversity into the programs that we fund in the future because we have a tremendous gap that exists. And I am very appreciative of what you're trying to do here, and I want to really express a great deal of gratitude for all the work that you've done to really bring voices together to do this. I know that Senator Hurd attempted to do some of that work when he put the grant criteria language, and that has been deleted.
Yeah.
So I've been thinking about how to incorporate some language to create that component into your bill. And I think that the best way to do it will be to put it under the eligible grantees. So in doing that, I would like to incorporate some language after you have an employer or an organization representing the employer is eligible to apply for a grant to train employees if the employer has employees who are or in to be trained to be in the occupation for which a competency standard has been identified and the employee has not attained the competency standard. And you have a period after the planned training, and I would like to add some language in there to add if the employer has set goals to increase the diversity of the employees.
Senator, just for reference, what lines are you referring to?
I am in line 117. So I'm in 116. So the idea is that the criteria will include some language that for the companies that are trying to recruit from diverse populations.
Mr. Chair, Senator Torres, right, when we were working with Senator Hur and certainly heard his desire and commitment consistent with what you're proposing, the challenge we have is that this approach is trying to launch a new way of training employees to reduce overall debt and reduce the skills gap and reduce the unemployment rates. And so DEED, this is the first time we're trying it, DEED will be charged with giving out these grants in a way that allow the students to go to school. We don't know if it's going to be done yet on a rolling basis, if all training programs will start in September or if they'll start in various points. And so we want to give DEED the flexibility because if we put in any, like, that's why we didn't want to put percentage of people in minority or, you know, if they're going to have a limited pot of money and they're going to decide when that money is given out based on the applications coming in. And so council felt as though the way the bill was designed was very difficult to direct DEED in that way in this bill because it's per student basis. So I'm not sure that works. One of the things I can tell you, and Deed could come to the table and explain more thoroughly, is that They do have a policy to give their grants, keeping that in mind. But perhaps council could address some of the concerns.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Torres-Ray.
Actually, I agree with what it was said with respect to the actual language that was in there, that you should get preference. I don't think that you can because that limits. But when you add language that simply adds to the criteria, that's a different thing. So actually the language that I'm proposing, it just simply states in policy that they will do what they are doing anyway. But I now can review it. Because now it's in policy, it's in their internal policy, and I could review it or not, people don't know. But if I put that language in state policy, not in their internal policy, then that forces everybody to review their criteria and just take into account what is already practiced. So actually, I'm building on the fact that they already do in practice. I just want to see it in the law.
Senator Torres-Ray, could you state the specific sentence again?
So in here, after training, I think I don't know if the staff, if you took notes. Thank you.
Yeah, so we could call on Mr. Fuller, please.
Mr. Chair, Senator Torres-Ray, I would amend the language on line 13. Let's see here. So after if, you'd put a colon, one. So it reads, an employer or an organization representing the employer is eligible to apply for a grant if, one, the employer has set goals to increase the diversity of its workforce, semicolon, and two, the employer has employees who are in or are to be trained to be in an occupation for which a competency standard has been identified, and so on. And the employee has not attained the competency standard prior to the commencement of the planned training. I would say that's where it goes. A practical matter, there is the issue of whether or not it is appropriate, you know, for any particular employer who maybe they're already extremely diverse. So it's assuming that there's a lack of diversity.
Right.
And so I think that issue sort of has to be thought about a little bit, you know. I don't know if we can do it on the spur of the moment, but so that's the assumption behind that. And obviously in the real world, that's not true sometimes. So you might give an employer an obligation to increase the diversity, and they're incredibly diverse, and they need somebody like me. I don't know. So,
that's a problem.
Yeah.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Senator Torres-Ray.
And that's, you know, the diversity is okay. I think one of the issues, that's why I leave it so broad, one of the issues we deal with is millennials now. So the issue of age, Mr. Fuller, is okay with me. So it's not just in terms of ethnicity and race, because I think diversity could be, you know, gender, it could be age, it could be anything, really. And actually, my preference would be to label this into economically disadvantaged, but I didn't want to actually add more problems to you, Senator Bonner, because that requires collection of data on income, and that's complicated. So, but I know that in the practice,
fine.
It's
all right. Senator Bonner? Yeah.
Mr. Chair, I accept that as a friendly amendment.
Mr. Fuller.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Torres-Ray, perhaps then, I don't know if you agree with anything. So before you say set goals, should we say appropriate goals and exit some wiggle room for people to be able to say more than they could otherwise, you know?
That's fine.
Yeah. Good. Right. Friendly amendment, as stated.
Very good. Any comments on the amendment? And yes, Senator Franzen.
Can Mr. Fuller elaborate on the difference between set goals and appropriate goals? I'm a little confused on what the difference
right.
is.
Mr.
I
Fuller.
Want to be clear.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Franzen, it's not a science, but the concern would be that you may have a company that's 100% minority or 95% minority or something like that. And I think the thought behind appropriate is sort of what the current thought would be, that they should somehow reflect the demographics of the community at least or something like that. And that gives the commissioner who's administering this program the ability to say, that's appropriate for you, instead of saying you have to increase your diversity if, in fact, they're diverse. So it's that's the thought. It retains some ability to be reasonable and appropriate.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonoff.
The only thing I just raised, and I guess I would like to hear from the committee your concern. So we have identified we want half the grant money to go to outstate Minnesota. Many outstate communities actually have quite diverse populations, but some of the smaller towns actually don't. And so is there any concern if, in order to fulfill one part of the bill, which is half go outstate, and then that community might not have a diverse population? But it seems to me that the way the language is written, you're not boxing anyone in, so I would think it's still okay. But
I'm going to ask Mr. Fuller, would you again read the amendment, please?
Mr. Chair, on line 13, after if, so say an employer or an organization representing an employer is eligible to apply for a grant to train employees if, colon, one, the employer has set appropriate goals to increase the diversity of its workforce, semicolon, and two, the employer has employees, so on. So I think the rest of the clause works.
Thank you, Mr. Fuller. Any final comments regarding the proposed amendment? Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Fuller, I guess my question would be, and maybe to Senator Bonoff's point about Greater Minnesota, must a company set appropriate goals in order to be eligible, or is that one of many criteria that could be used by the department?
Mr. Fuller.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pratt, they would have to satisfy that criteria before they're eligible to apply. So it wouldn't be considered by the commissioner. It's an absolute must.
Senator Miller, then Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Fuller, who would determine what an appropriate goal is?
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Fuller.
Senator Miller, ultimately the commissioner. That's the issue. This language, the word appropriate, was selected to give more ability for the commissioner to come to a reasonable conclusion. It's inexact.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I understand what Senator Torres-Ray is trying to do. I am concerned about this being part of the eligibility, though, and what we might want is for these employers to set goals, but they might not be able to achieve the goals, and we don't want their inability to achieve the goals to make them ineligible. At least I don't. If they are making a good faith effort to become more diverse, which is what Senator Torres-Ray is trying to accomplish here. So I think the appropriate helps to adjust that, but I'm concerned that the fact that it's being amended into the eligibility criteria creates an issue, as Senator Pratt has pointed out, that now the commissioner is in a position to evaluate the goals themselves and whether or not the goals have been met in order to determine the eligibility of a company. And I don't think that's what's intended here. It's not what I would hope for in a bill like this.
Senator Nelson, I apologize. I skipped over you. You were next in line. So
that's okay. My comments would be, I understand where we're all trying to go with this, and it's essentially important. And we had a similar discussion in jobs yesterday. So I have a suggestion that might, I think, get to the goal where we want to go without any unintended consequences. And my suggestion would be to incorporate, we need to know what's happening. It's not just about goals. We want to know what the results and outcomes are. So, Senator Torres-Ray, you and I have worked on similar language before when we were in the Jobs Committee. And my suggestion would be to, on page 3, actually amend subdivision 9 about reporting. And so that part of the report would be report the number or percent of women and minority who are being trained. I mean, I think that is our goal here. It's a job training program, dual program. And so what we really want to do is make sure that we're getting women and minority students involved in this program. And so my suggestion would be to incorporate women and minority numbers or women and minority amount of students served in the reporting requirements. And perhaps Mr. Fuller could elaborate on that. But I would offer that as an amendment when we are finished with the amendment that's on the table at this point.
Mr. Fuller, he's fine. Senator Bonoff, you've heard some discussion here. We've got two proposals. Your thoughts?
Mr. Chair, and it's funny, I have Deputy Commissioner Jeremy Hansen-Willis, not to support the bill, but just to ask questions, you know, as a deed commissioner, how would he view that? So he's not on the record for agreeing or disagreeing with anything. But I actually think that because of the way Senator Torres-Ray has structured it, that says has a goal, doesn't say has to fulfill the goal, and spoke to the folks, for example, from 3M, who said that in order to, for example, have a government contract, they have to have an affirmative action goal. And so it was pretty standard to have a goal. So I don't think, and we don't ask for any reporting of if you achieved your goal and set any threshold with regard to that. I'm comfortable with the amendment the way it is. And, so one other thing. With regard to the reporting, Senator Nelson's, I'm concerned about privacy and quotas because I don't know that it is feasible for us to get all that information about ethnic data. You know, you always have the option of saying you don't want to comment, and I'm just not sure.
Maybe I could address that after we've adopted this
Senator
amendment.
Nelson. Senator Pratt, I believe, had a comment.
Thank you. I guess my question is for the Deputy Commissioner then, because Senator Torres-Ray mentioned that there are already policies in place at DEED, and this is memorializing it in statute. Could you explain what the current DEED policy is so we can maybe get caught up to speed?
Yes, Deputy Commissioner, welcome. Would you please identify yourself for the record?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jeremy Hansen-Willis. I'm the Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Employment and Economic Development, and I can answer the question to the best of my ability, as DEED does manage and administer a number of workforce development programs. And in doing so, we do a lot of outreach to communities of color to make sure that organizations that serve those communities are aware of our programs and have an opportunity to apply for them through different communications, outreach, and bidders conferences in relationship with community-based organizations. It's always our goal to have as diverse and representative a set of grantees and applicants as possible. And so the policies, I think, that were referenced are those that direct us and that we take seriously to make sure that we have outreach to diverse populations and that diverse populations make up a representative share of the applicants and grantees.
Thank you. Any other comments, questions? Any comment, questions from the audience regarding discussion on the amendment? Mr. Fuller, I'm going to ask one more time that you read the amendment before we put it to the vote.
Mr. Chair, members, page 1, line 13, after the word if, insert a colon, 1, the employer has set appropriate goals to increase the diversity of its workforce, semicolon, and 2.
Very good. Thank you. Once again, questions, comments, Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Torres-Ray, I really appreciate what you're trying to do here and understand. My concern is that doing this on the fly makes me a bit uncomfortable, and especially having some unintended consequences in implementation. So I'm going to oppose the amendment, not because I disagree with the intent, but more about kind of where we're at right now, and I want to make sure the department has the flexibility to implement the standards that they have. If we have any concerns with the policy being executed by DEED, we can always bring them in front of the legislature and have that conversation. So thank you for having the conversation, but that would be my rationale.
Good. Yes. Any other comments, questions? All right, seeing none, hearing none. You've all heard the amendment as proposed by Senator Torres-Ray. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed?
No.
Amendment passes. And now Senator Nelson.
Mr. Chair and committee members, I would like to offer an oral amendment on page 3, and I believe this would be inserted after line 3.14, and then things would be renumbered accordingly. And so number 3 would say, this is about what the report should include. The report should include the number of women and minority employees who commenced training and the number who completed training. So I think it's important to have goals, but also we really want to know how is this program working. And I do know, and I understand Senator Bonoff's concerns, but we have used the same language when we have amended deed grants as well. So this is something that can be done and Great. Is in current language.
Okay. Senator Bonoff?
Great.
Okay. Mr. Fuller is working on the amendment. Any other discussion while we're waiting for
Mr.
Fuller? Yes,
Mr. Chair,
Senator
I
Ortman.
Just say that I think this is a preferable way for me to try and accomplish the goals that Senator Torres-Ray has set out. So I support her goals, and I think this is a good way to accomplish it.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Torres-Ray.
You know, There are two steps to this process, and I think that they go in sequence. If we know, then we do this, right? So I fully support your amendment, Senator, because I think it's very important that we have the information. The issue is that we already know that we have underrepresentation. We already have that information. So I appreciate the direction of keeping us, you know, informed and keeping that information, that demographic information. But this is my amendment is directive. It just says, you know, if you have this goal, you can apply for this and you will be given, yes. you know, an opportunity. And it's an important goal that we always say that we support, but we never put the language to actually get it done and review it. So my hope is that these complement each other. I think we're going to see numbers increasing as a result of the criteria, and I hope that this documentation that you're requesting, Senator Nelson, actually will prove that.
Okay. And Mr. Chair.
Senator Nelson.
Just a final comment on that. I think you're correct, Senator Torres-Ray. So the goal is there, and then this is just measuring it. One would recall when we tried to do some things with deed grants, the comment was, well, how do you know that the grants aren't being appropriated to include particular women and minority-owned businesses in that case? And so that's why I think the reporting is important as well. But it is. It's on the front end, and it's on the back end. So I think we have a good proposal here.
Mr. Fuller, could you read the amendment?
Mr. Chair, page 3, line 14, delete and insert a new clause 3, semicolon 3. And listen closely, I'm not sure I got it. The number of women and minorities who commence training and the number who complete training, semicolon, and then page 3, line 15, you renumber the 3 to a 4. And if you look up at the reporting, you'll see on line 8 that it's for the preceding year. So it would be for the preceding year that they would have to report that information.
And just one comment.
Yes, Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Fuller, I was just copying the language in bullet point 2, and I noticed as you read the oral amendment, you did not say the number of women and minority employees. And so I'm wondering if we need to put the word employees in there to be consistent with the rest of the reporting requirements so they know exactly what number what we're looking at here.
Mr. Fuller?
Mr. Chair, the answer would be no, but we can do it.
no need. I will take your amendment as read. We do not need to insert that word.
Senator Bonoff, any comments?
No, I support the amendment.
Okay. Any other comments by committee members? Anyone in the audience care to testify regarding this amendment? Okay. Hearing none. One more time, Mr. Fuller, with the corrected language, and then we'll vote.
Page 3, line 14, delete and insert semicolon, three, the number of women and minorities who commence training and the number who complete training, semicolon, page three, delete three, insert four. Okay. Page three, line 15, delete three, and insert four.
Very good. All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, same signal. Okay. The amendment passes. Thank you. Senator Bonoff, any other testimony?
No, I would like to move that Senate File 5, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to Finance.
State and local?
Oh, state and local first. I apologize. State and local. There is an exemption for rules to give the Dolly Commissioner room to do the competency, to establish the competency standards rather than have it go through the rules process, because in order to have a robust dual education system, we have to be, as you can hear from the gentleman from Germany, they have 350 different jobs with competency standards. You can imagine what it would be if each one had to go through the rules process. So there is an exemption that with regard to competency standards that we don't need to go through the rules process. And so in order to get that exemption, we need to go to your committee, Senator Torres-Ray. So I move that Senate File 5 is amended, be recommended to pass and referred to state and local.
Very good. Senator Bonoff moves to re-refer Senate File 5 as amended to the State and Local Government Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, same sign.
Thank you very much.
Senate File 5 as amended passes. Any other business before our
there
committee?
Is. There is. So, Mr. Chair, actually, we do have deed reports, and I know we did, again, start 10 minutes late, and so if members would stay to hear the deed reports, I know they're scowling, but they have sat through.
Shouldn't start late. Don't start late.
So, Deputy Commissioner, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for your patience. Oh, goodbye, Mr. Nelson. It's so nice to have you here. Safe travels. As I understand it, we're only going to do one of the two reports right now, as one of your people had. Oh, we are going to do two.
Two
of the three. We leave it to you. Thank you very much.
Can't stay.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Again, my name is Jeremy Hansen Willis. I'm Deputy Commissioner at DEED. And there are two topics that we want to briefly update you on today at the request of the committee. One is the work that we have been doing with the Itasca project and other business and community leaders to provide new data and information to job search and workforce development. And the second is our workforce, the Governor's Workforce Development Council has a new report that we submitted to the legislature in January regarding the net impact investment on workforce development programs. So we will try to get through these briefly, but know that it was of interest to the committee to hear about this today. I will begin with the first report on the Itasca project, and then our Governor's Workforce Council staff, Nick Marins, to my right here, will talk about the net impact study. Um, Briefly, the work with the Itasca project on workforce development, I will briefly overview this. I'll talk about the pilot projects that came out of this initiative and then some of the recommendations that are in place. This effort on workforce alignment really stems out of the current economic situation we find ourselves here in Minnesota. There's been a lot of conversation, including here today again, on trying to meet the workforce needs of our state, addressing the skills gaps that many of our businesses are facing, and the low labor force growth and labor shortage in many parts of our state. We know that there are many efforts underway to try to address these needs, and the Itasca project came together to say maybe there are ways that they would investigate to better align and bring new tools to this conversation. For those of you who might not be familiar, the Itasca project itself is a business-led organization made up of also civic leaders around our state, include the CEOs of some of Minnesota's largest companies, and also the governor's office, the mayors of Minneapolis-St. Paul, many county commissioners, deed commissioner, the chair of the Met Council, and some of our leaders of higher education and the philanthropic community. The Itasca project itself, of which we've been proud to be a member, has taken on many civic projects, and highest among them being in higher education and workforce development. And this project really grows out of that effort. And as you can see from this next slide, some of the folks that have been playing a leadership role in this effort, the Itasca project created a workforce alignment team, which was co-chaired by Chancellor Stephen Rosenstone of MinSCU and Scott Peterson, who's the Executive Vice President and Chief Human Resources Officer for Schwann's. And you can see the rest of the committee that was involved here, a good cross-section of public and private and education that worked for the last couple of years on this project, and including myself and our commissioner and also the chair of the Governor's Workforce Council. Throughout this effort, many, many organizations have been involved in the Itasca project effort to try to align our workforce development, as you can see from some of the logos here. So a couple of years ago, when the Itasca project undertook this effort to try to better align and bring new tools to our workforce development effort, they did so by conducting a lot of research and a lot of surveys, and they got insight and information and feedback from more than 600 stakeholders all around the state through surveys and polls and conversations, both from employers as well as the workforce development system and higher education, to try to best understand the problem and the context in which we are working today. They found that academic leaders, career counselors, and employers all were looking for more and better information to guide their own decisions and the decisions of job seekers. The goal of the workforce alignment effort really is to help these entities make better decisions with better information and shared data that both employers and job seekers and the higher educational institutions that seek to educate our job seekers, we're all yearning for more and better information to guide the decisions that they all independently had to make. And this is the area that the Itasca project decided to focus. Earlier last year, from January to July of 2014, there were a series of pilot projects conducted around the state, testing different information and data tools that employers, higher ed, job counselors, and job seekers could use. These pilot projects, as you can see from this map, were used throughout the state at higher education institutions and workforce centers. In particular, there were three technological data tools that were tested in these pilot projects. One was called Wanted Analytics, which is a collection of online job postings, everything from Monster.com to our own MinnesotaWorks.net to Craigslist. This tool aggregates all kinds of job posting information and then provides very localized data on that job posting in real time. So it's job postings that are being right on live on the internet today, including on different employer websites where they post jobs. So this tool takes all that information, deduplicates it, and then gives you very useful reports. EMSI, which is a collection of labor market information from around the country, and also C4EO, which was a cloud-based mapping curriculum. We tested these tools all around the state and found that of the ones that the pilots found most useful was those that provided the real-time job posting information. And as you can see, we're not the only state looking at how to find better uses for real-time data. Both the U.S. Department of Labor and the National Organization Jobs for a Future of Achieving Our Dream have looked at how to have real-time job posting information as a part of the labor market information that states can provide. And so the work to date has really focused on this tool of wanted analytics and providing this real-time job posting information, which is not a tool that most parts of our workforce development system are using today, and that academic leaders and employers and career counselors looked at this research from around the country and found that within all of the labor market information that was available today, that it would be a very it would be a great tool and an asset to have this real-time job information that pulls from job postings all over the internet. As you can see from the pilot projects, 86% of the academic institutions that used the tool said that they found it valuable in helping them to make effective decisions. And the kind of decisions that they were making were the kind of curriculum and classes that they needed to prepare and conduct. And they wanted to make sure that the classes that were available on college campuses, primarily the University of Minnesota and Minsky campuses, that they were reflecting the actual need in the marketplace today, and found that wanted analytics provided a very valuable tool to give them an idea of what the marketplace demand was in real time. Second of all, employers, especially those who are on various advisory groups to the workforce development system as well as Minsky campuses, 90% of the employers in the pilots felt that this new data was useful to them to give them the counsel and guidance that they needed to do workforce development and have conversations with higher education. And lastly, the workforce centers, which are managed by DEED, 90% of our counselors in the five workforce center sites around the state said that wanted analytics was a very effective tool in helping them guide our job seekers in counseling them to find the jobs that were going to have marketplace demand, so that when our unemployed folks are looking for jobs, they know through this information about the jobs that are actually being posted. So they get a sense of both the occupations and the skills and the companies that are hiring and what kind of skills they're looking for in a very specific geographical area. So we took all of this information and evaluated all of these pilots, and then move forward to find ways to bring this information out more broadly into the public. And so after putting out the pilots and conducting these evaluations, using a third-party evaluator, we came forward with a series of recommendations moving forward. And based on the piloting of these three tools, and again, finding that wanted analytics and the real-time job posting information being the most valuable, the recommendations of this effort were that we should provide more access to wanted analytics throughout the state. Again, there were only in a handful of places that were piloted, and those licenses for the technology were on a short-term basis. So first of all, the recommendation to provide access to this tool more widely around the state, in particular on higher education campuses and in workforce centers. But second of all, that a technology and a tool in and of itself is not the answer, that a lot of training and technical assistance would need to be provided to make sure that the tool was used properly and the most effective manner. Just handing over technology to somebody isn't always the best solution unless they're guided in how best to use it. So that brings us to this moment as we think about where do we go into the future. And so we are working very closely right now at DEED with the staff at Itasca and our partners at the university and in Minsky, and also in the private sector with the Minnesota Chamber and other key industry groups to determine exactly how we are going to bring wanted analytics throughout the state to more college campuses, to more employers, and to more, actually, hopefully, all of the workforce centers around the state, so that our job counselors and our faculty and our employers have access to this real-time information to make better decisions ongoing into the future. And again, not just providing the training and the technical assistance, but also we hope that this will drive better decisions along the way, which is why we're going to create an oversight board, a convening body to oversee this work that would be made up of public and private stakeholders, including employers and trade associations, so that we are all looking at the same data and we can make more strategic decisions about the future of our workforce system moving forward. So the priorities of the effort right now are to get these wanted analytic licenses around the state, to make sure that technical assistance and training is provided, and that we use it to guide better decisions by our entire workforce development system. And with that, I'll see if the committee has any other questions.
Thank you. Senator Nelson.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Oh, this is very exciting to hear about the wanted analytics and the real-time data. As a member of the Governor's Workforce Development Council, one of the saddest things is to hear about this skills gap that we have. So we have openings, but we don't have the people to fill them because the skills aren't matching what the jobs are. So I think this is a wonderful proposal, and I'm glad to hear that the pilot sites proved positive, which one would think they would. I have a little question. Analytics is that real, if I understand what you're saying, wanted analytics is that real time where those job vacancies are today, and where I can see where that would be essential in our workforce development centers, and would hope that's the priority for those licenses for that, for wanted analytics. On the other hand, I see it would appear that the EMSI public data sets would be most beneficial to our institutions of higher learning, since they are preparing students for the job market into the future in which they will be entering in 1 to 4 years. We hope 4 years. We don't want to spread that out longer. But so that's kind of the my question would be, in prioritizing which of these tools is used and in what setting, because we always have to prioritize, and they're both phenomenal tools. My question would be, if you plan to get the wanted analytics first in the workforce development centers, where the people are actually looking for jobs today, for the jobs that actually are being posted on wanted analytics.
Yes, thank you. Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, a great question. And there were many different factors in choosing about whether to move forward. Part was the what the pilots themselves thought about the use of the tool and how they applied it every day and whether they found it useful. Other factors like cost and ability to share the technology around the state was taken into account, and also duplication of existing information. And much of what's in EMSI is currently available in the Labor Market Information Office within DEED. And I think your point is well taken in that wanted analytics as a very important and effective new tool, it's not in itself a silver bullet and is best used within the suite of information and tools that we already provide at DEED through our Labor Market Information Office. We conduct a lot of surveys by two businesses, and we collect information about vacancy rates in terms of labor force and also difficulty to hire. And so there's a lot of information that we already collect and analyze and provide out to allow higher educational institutions to be able to track well into the future to see trends over a longer period of time and a much more comprehensive level. And so it was felt that EMSI would unnecessarily duplicate many of the information and services that DEED already provides through our Labor Market Information Office, that the one tool that we did not provide currently that was found to have value is the real-time job posting data through Wanted Analytics.
Just a follow-up.
Sure, Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that clarification. I thought I understood that you were going to roll out all three of these, and so I'm glad we're not duplicating what we already have. But again, my hope would be that with targeted resources, something like wanted analytics, which is those current job postings, would get first out to the workforce development centers where we have people who are looking for jobs today. And I can see where it's very important in our higher education institutions as well. But they are training the jobs that you see today on wanted analytics might not be the same jobs that are going to be there at the day of graduation. So that would be my hope in prioritizing.
Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, thank you for the opportunity to clarify. Yes, of all the tools that we did test, the one that we're moving forward on is wanted analytics. And our highest priority is having the wanted analytics license available at workforce centers throughout the state.
Thank you.
We received funding late last year from the Minnesota Job Skills Partnership to allow us to do exactly that. And so a high priority for us is making sure as many workforce centers as possible have the license, as also the training and technical assistance. As the biggest benefit for this wanted analytics tool is for job seekers themselves, as you accurately note.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And two quick questions, and then I am afraid we are not going to be able to do the second report. And since we're coming back a second time anyway to get the other report, we'd like to, Mr. Mark, tell me how you pronounce your name.
Madam Chair, it's Marins.
Marins, thank you. Mr. Marins, we do want to hear from you, and we'd like to hear from you the same day that we do the report card, because otherwise we're just not going to give enough time, and it's really good information. So my two quick questions with regard to this report are, number one, is there money in the governor's budget for this, and if so, how much? And number two, you didn't comment on how the cloud approach to mapping the curriculum to the needs worked out?
Madam Chair, great questions. The second question first, I am not as familiar with that proposal, but we can get back to you with more information about that. I was not in this role when that part of the project was being studied, so I'm more familiar with the other two than with that third. And Beth Kessler, who is on staff with the Itasca project, was not able to be with us today. She would certainly be able to answer that.
Thank you.
And even though I was involved in the project, I was not involved in that part of it. And your first question, there is not funding in the governor's budget for this. As I said, we were able to get funding through the Job Skills Partnership to begin purchasing the licenses and the technical assistance around the state. We will look to integrate this within our current workforce development and labor market information systems. And as I also mentioned, the idea is to build a board and an entity around this and have a private sector investment. And so MinSCU, the University of Minnesota, the Minnesota Chamber, and other industry groups are all in conversation with us about how they might invest in, both financially and through their leadership, in the success and ongoing implementation of this effort.
Well, thank you very much. Excellent presentation, and we appreciate the update. And again, I'm sorry. Thanks very much. So with that, committee is adjourned.